Well, well, well. A bad thing has happened for the very first time since I started Curmudgeon's Corner. Well, since Yvonne and I restarted the version that we've done recently, which is that we generally record on a Sunday these days. For a while, we recorded on Monday, at least Monday UTC, and I at first I would always get those out like within a few hours after recording them, and usually on Monday UTC after recording them Sunday UTC, or Tuesday UTC after recording them Monday UTC. But then, you know, life came around and things got busy and things were going on and it slipped, and recently I've been pushing them out on Friday, even though we still record on Sunday, and a couple times it's even slipped to Saturday. Well, this time it's getting pushed out on Sunday, UTC. And I have really no good excuses other than, well, you know, I've been doing it Friday mornings before work, and this Friday I took work off because we were doing more moving stuff, and I kind of forgot until, you know, late Saturday night, or at least Saturday night. And then I actually ditched my family, who is busy boxing up more stuff, and ran back, and I'm putting out the podcast on, it's early Sunday UTC, late Saturday Pacific time. Anyway, for the first time ever, an entire Sunday to Saturday has gone by without me releasing a Curmudgeon's Corner, and I really, really apologize. We still haven't missed a week recording one, but I'm releasing this really late. And I know on a program that's talking about topical, timely things, it kind of sucks to be releasing it a week later, even 5 days later, 4 days later. That's ridiculous. I really need to get back to releasing it same day we record it. And I'd love to say I promise to do that, that I will do better. And I want to do better. And I want to release them sooner, same day, so that they're still very, very timely and topical and all that. But, well, things get busy. So let me just apologize. And now, on Sunday, September 25th, I am releasing the Curmudgeon's Corner that was recorded on Sunday, September 18th, almost a week ago, just a few hours short of a week ago. I'm sorry. But here it is. Enjoy your slightly, well, okay, a lot late Curmudgeon's Corner.
Yeah, Alex has some better ideas.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, September 18th, 2011. Daddy. I've got Devon Bo with me. I'm Sam Minter, and you hear Alex here talking too.
Yeah.
Now, Yvonne and I just spent the last, you know, 10 minutes discussing the fact that we really have nothing to say.
Oh, you really?
So that's a show. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you. Good night. You know, ugh, God, I don't know why. Why do you think it is that we're just grasping the straws this week? I mean, I don't know. I had a rough week.
You'd say it's like the summer doldrums, but it's the summer's over pretty much, you know?
Yeah. So I did have a pretty rough week. I will say this. I mean, on Friday, I don't know. I started was battling allergies this week.
Uh-huh.
And on Friday, after a long drive to get to the University of Miami, okay?
Yeah.
I was like, it was already past 9 o'clock by the time I got there, a little bit past nine.
Yeah.
And I stopped at Starbucks in order to try to get a cup of coffee because I wasn't feeling well because of my allergies. Wanted to get some coffee, sit down for a little, drink some water. I was thirsty. And I wanted to fire up my computer and check something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I go and I grab the coffee, grab the water. I go to sit down at a table outside, okay? And I fire up my laptop, and the battery was dead. And I forgot to bring the AC adapter. Okay? All right?
So, I hate it when that happens.
Okay, so we're not, you know, we're already off to a disastrous moment, okay? I'm like, fuck. So I go, well, I have my phone, so I'm like, okay, look, I mean, I can read this stuff on my phone. It's not going to be as easy, but whatever. Okay, we'll do this, okay? So I, you know, made a couple calls, had like four or five, you know, had people like, I had people call. I mean, I was on the phone all the way down there. I had a couple of things I had to take care of. I mean, one of the people I had to call back is because I wanted to look at some information on the computer and answer his question, but I decided to try to open a file on my phone and try to see it, do the best I could with it. So going back and forth, doing this stuff. Anyway, so we get through all of that. Then as I'm walking away, I realized, whoa, wait a second. I needed to pull out this map to understand where did I have to go to at University of Miami to meet these people, okay? So I go and I grab my, I have this little black little leather thing where I keep my, you know, if I got real documents where I keep those in there. So I put my briefcase down, pull that out, and start looking through the map and figuring out where I got to go, what I got to do. At that moment, phone rings, okay? So I have to answer the call, and I'm looking at the map, and I'm putting everything back together. So I go, and I start walking towards the car, get in the car, and leave. 4 hours later, I realized that when I did that, I walked away with a folder in hand on my phone, but left my briefcase at Starbucks.
Oh, okay? Very nice.
Now, 4 hours later, okay? And I'm like, oh, shit. So I panic, so I have to head back to Starbucks. And because this is like right by University of Miami on US 1, I mean, this is the most difficult place to get parking anywhere at a Starbucks in the world, okay? I mean, it's just bonkers every time you're there.
Did you call them first?
Well, I was so close that I, you know what, by the time I went and like found a phone number, called them and did that, I mean, might as well just drive there because okay, I was actually okay. Like just... I was less than 5 minutes away, okay? So, screw it. I went, I headed there, just headed straight there. Couldn't find parking. Actually, parked a car in a no parking zone in an alley, whatever. You know, just freaking, like, just jumped out of the car. Ran to where I, you know, to where I was sitting. And luckily enough, my briefcase sat there in that chair on an outside table for 4 hours. Nobody touched it.
Good.
It was there. It was right there when I got there. I was like, ah. God.
You know. Well, you know, over here we're still knee-deep in moving. So last week we had the big 26-foot rental truck and we did a couple loads back and forth. We completely emptied out the self-storage space that we'd had for the last 5 years and then got started on the house itself. But we weren't anywhere close to being done. And knowing that neither one of us was going to be able to get jack done during the week, we returned the truck. We rented a new one for this week, only 16 feet this time, okay. And so we made one more round yesterday. Oh, and I should mention, since you forgot your briefcase, Brandy lost her phone.
Oh.
And, you know, looking all over the car, looking all over, and it was like, hey, maybe we returned it with the truck.
Did you do the find my iPhone
thing? The battery was dead.
Oh, well, okay.
So, anyway, so she, she called the truck rental place and, nope, we don't have it. Haven't seen it. Called the truck rental place again the next day. Nope. Still don't have it. Still haven't seen it. Then the next morning I get a text on my phone from her saying, hey, we found this phone. Any idea whose it is? And it was the truck rental place.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay.
It was one of the mechanics, but the point is, like, the person she'd called twice didn't ever apparently look for it.
That'd be a lot of work.
You'd have to get up and, you know, walk across and I don't know. But you know, again, like you said, you know, your briefcase was there 4 hours, no one touching it. You know, the person who found it is like, hey, you know, let's try to figure out who this is from. You know, most people really are good Samaritans when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Occasionally
you have bad luck, but you know, most people try to do the right thing when they find something that's lost.
Look, here's the thing. I mean, I left this in the middle of Miami, for God's sakes. I mean, it's not like I left it in some small town or something. Okay. Everybody, when I first told them, thought that, oh my gosh, they stole it. Forget it. It's done. Whatever. Nope. It sat there for 4 hours. I had a laptop in there. I had passports. I think there were some credit cards in there. Stuff. I mean, you know, and nobody touched it.
The other day I was going, I was leaving a store, and I went to my car, and in the parking space next to my car was somebody's bag.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitting there by itself. You know, and you know, there are a few choices you have there. You could call the TSA and say there's a suspicious package, and oh my god, there's a bomb.
Yeah.
Or, I took it back into the store and said someone left this in your parking lot. I could have gone further and actually opened up the damn thing and looked to see if I could figure out who it was and contact themselves, but... them myself, but I was like, nah, I'm giving it to the store. They can do all that crap.
Right.
But, you know, people are decent.
So, yeah, I mean, there you go. So the moral of the story for this week is that, you know, what, I guess people aren't that bad, huh?
Okay. So let's call that a segment. We'll be back after this. We actually did come up with a couple things to talk about. There's news on the Israeli-Palestinian front. There's a little bit of an update on Obama's job plan. And they were demoing Windows 8 and showing stuff off this week, too. So,
and apparently Alex has learned how to say daddy very, very well.
You can say daddy very well, huh? Now he's quiet. Okay, we'll be back after this exciting message. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, here we are. So, Palestinians. The Palestinians have been saying for a while that they're going to ask for official recognition as a state. The U.S., while saying that, in general, we support the policy of a two-state solution with a Palestinian state, we don't think the time is right, and we'd rather they not do this. The Palestinians have now decided they're going to do it anyway. And
well, I got to tell you something. Well, you know, I was thinking about this when I saw this, and, well, I was trying to remember. Isn't this what the Israelis did anyway in order to get their country in the first place?
I don't remember the details of that, but I thought it was... I mean, there were certainly lots of lobbying. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. So someone just pulled my router up off the shelf and onto the floor, and it made a big crashing noise. Okay, but you're still there, so...
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, there was a lot of lobbying in favor for an Israeli state in the aftermath of World War II, but I can't admit to knowing the logistics of it. I mean, was the UN... Did the UN even exist before?
Yes, it did. And
okay,
I'm looking at it here.
Months,
following,
probably.
Here's what I'm looking at here about this. It said, you know, following the 1947 United Nations decision to partition Palestine, on 14th of May, 1948, David Ben-Gurion, executive head of the World Zionist Organization and president of the Jewish Agency for Palestine, declared Israel a state independent from the British Mandate for Palestine. So there was a UN decision to partition Palestine, and, you know, I guess if you take that, I mean, why couldn't you, like, I mean, what, you know.
Well, here's the thing. There's two different things. There's sort of the Palestinians themselves declaring we are a state, and now they're applying to the UN and saying, hey, count us as a full state. Now, the problem in the UN is that the U.S. might veto it. And, in fact, the indications so far...
Well, wait, but this isn't the Security Council resolution. I mean, if it goes to the General Assembly, that there is no veto.
Well, can the General Assembly decide on membership without the Security Council agreeing?
I believe so, yes.
Because I keep hearing about a U.S. veto.
I did not think that the Security Council could veto that, to be honest with you.
And thus we show our complete ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how, I don't see where, I'll look it up, but as far as I remember, I mean, I spent a lot of time working the frickin' UN did stuff, and application for UN membership, let me see, but I don't recall that, I mean, that was a General Assembly issue. So, here we go. UN General Assembly, rules of procedure, admissions of new members to the United Nations. Any state which desires to become a member of the UN shall submit an application to the Secretary General. Such an application should contain a declaration made in formal instrument that the state in question accepts the obligations contained in the charter. The Secretary General, for information, sends a copy of the application to the General Assembly or to members of the UN if the Assembly is not in session. This is what it says. If the Security Council recommends the applicant state for membership, the General Assembly shall consider whether the applicant is a peace-loving state and is able to and willing to carry out the obligations contained in the Charter and shall decide by a two-thirds majority of the members present in voting upon its application to member. I guess what it says is
okay,
that...
Okay, so the Security Council has to recommend it to the General Assembly.
Has to recommend the membership. But wait. If the Securities Council does not recommend the applicant state for membership or postpones consideration of the application, the General Assembly may, after full consideration of a special report, send the application back to the Council together with a full record of discussion of the Assembly for further consideration and recommendation on or report. So I guess that what can happen is that the General Assembly can still take the vote and apparently send it back to the Security Council. So,
but in the end, the Security Council, they can't veto the Security Council. Well, they can't override the Security Council, or can they?
It's not really clear when I'm reading this. Secretary General shall inform the applicant state of the decision of the General Assembly. If the application is approved, membership shall become effective on the date on which the General Assembly takes its decision on the application.
It seems like what's happening right now is they're doing the application to the Security Council.
Yes.
So...
Well, actually, the application first goes to the Secretary General, and then it gets sent to, a recommendation is sought from the Security Council.
Okay, so, in any case, at the current stage of the process, the U.S. can veto it, and there may be more recourse after that,
right.
But... Apparently, the motions being what is being floated is essentially everyone kind of assumes that the U.S. will veto this. Now, this seems like one of those places where, I don't know that that's at some point, this stuff has to be pushed along. And I know Israel wants to drag its feet forever. Because they don't really want this. They don't want the two-state solution, despite saying that they have at various points in the process. The U.S. government position right now is that more talks have to happen and a more detailed outline of a solution has to be in place before anything like this happens. At some point, you just got to... If those things have not moved forward in, at least a decade, maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we saw any real progress on anything over there was during the Clinton administration.
Right.
I don't blame the Palestinians at all to try to push it to the
next level. I think it makes sense, to be honest with you. Why not?
And frankly, I think it would not be bad U.S. policy to say, Israel, you've had 12 years to work something out here. So, here we go. We'll work something out. There's a Palestinian state. Now work with the state. Now work with a new Palestinian state. Figure things out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes sense. So
I know the Israeli lobby in the U.S. is very strong. I know there's the whole, Israel's the only democracy. We have to do everything, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, come on. You know,
I mean, how long can we continue just denying them the right of having a state? I mean, that's all I'm saying. I mean, I just don't think it's sensible.
I mean, the alternative that is going into in that area is that, you know, you continue this, the status quo indefinitely, and you get a more and more unfair situation, you know, in terms of what real democracy would look like, because you, and I don't know, I mean, fundamentally, like, you have that conflict that's going to go on in terms
of... Well, I think that if you think about it, if you see what, you know, given the Security Council can reject it and send back for reconsideration, I think they could, I think that they could actually take this as an opportunity to actually say, well, okay, all right, you want to, us to approve this application, so we would like you to do A, B, and C. You know, whatever that may be, A, B, and C, what those conditions are. I mean, why not?
Yeah, although you have to, you still have to have...
I'm not talking about putting onerous conditions. I'm just talking about certain things, like, for example, expectation of elections at a certain date, expectation of certain...
Expectation of elections being absolutely unambiguous of the right of the Israeli state to exist in its current form.
Right. That kind of stuff.
Concessions on the borders, some sort of solution on Jerusalem as capital. You know, because that part of the controversy, of course, here is that the proposal that's being put forth has, I forget if it's this 67 or 47 borders, and Jerusalem is the capital of the new state.
Right.
And, of course, I can see why that would be a conflict there. You know,
right.
I mean, it's the fundamental conflict that these guys have had forever, you know?
Right, so let's put some conditions back on resolving it. I mean, why don't we take this as an opportunity?
Yeah, okay, we'll see what happens. Let's take another break. It's time for your poem of the week. And after your poem, we will be back with some talk about the jobs plan, the budget plan, all that kind of stuff. And Yvonne will make more music. Back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
House Cleaning by Alice B. Fogel. You know, sometimes the house feels like a dump, for instance, maybe before you go away or when you come back. You could pay a little attention to detail, act like you care to notice where the cobwebs dull the plaster, how much dust dims the shelves, because did you know that neglected houses deteriorate faster than tended ones? So once in a while, will you clear the air, stop overlooking dead bulbs and lamps, needs to take out the trash, make good a promise to scrub and to sweep under your bed and lie in it, at least occasionally, get down on your knees with a rag, a sponge around the grimed toilet rim, drag out the vac plump the pillows, feel for what's under their leaking pens, sticky nickels, dimes. Just remember, tidiness isn't the same as change. Still, when was the last time you touched the house this way? Unhurried, a little possessive about where things go, what belongs? There is a place for everything, too much to ask. All right. Enough, you already wiped that down, you could rub it raw. Scratch the finish, push the furniture too far from its dark indents. Otherwise, next to godliness. The house wants to be neatly accepted for what it is, or at least what you ought to know it could be now. And then either you work with what you've got alongside each other like parallel lines, said to meet somewhere, or else you know a place could get too perfect. You're like a Venn diagram, all codependent overlap. How about you compromise with good enough for that comfortably lived-in look? A spotless reputation wasn't what the house had in mind and won't let anyone feel at home.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are. Okay, Yvonne, what happened on the jobs plan this week? We talked a lot about the jobs plan last week, but I guess there have been more developments, and they're talking about how to pay for it and blah, 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 blah.
Well, I guess if you look I looked and I read a little bit more this week on the details of what the job plan entails. I mean, a big part of the actions in order to generate jobs have to do with certain. I mean, there's a payroll tax cut that we've had this year that cut like about a couple of points off of what we normally get deducted from our checks every week. And so they want to expand that a little bit, but also at the same time, they wanted to reduce the amount of employer contributions in taxes, which, you know, say what in some of those the taxes that we're talking about, there's a deduction from the employer, but there's also a contribution by the employer, and they wanted to cut that. But they wanted to expand that contribution. So, say, if you added more jobs or you did certain things to create more jobs, your tax benefits would grow. Okay, so you'd get more. But the whole thing is that, of course, they came up with how to pay for this. Okay, and the biggest chunk of how to pay for it was actually I'll read you the four ways: limiting deductions for upper income earners, treating care and interest as ordinary income, limiting oil and gas company tax benefits, and remove a corporate jet tax breaks, and that would raise $467 billion. The biggest change in the limiting deductions for upper income earners is basically a huge overhaul of the alternative minimum tax, in which the AMT as it exists would basically go away, and we could replace with a formula that actually does work to a certain extent, because the AMT right now is not doing what it was meant to do, okay? The AMT was meant to for people that had a lot of payroll income and the standard types of deductions. It would allow them to be able to make sure that they paid the tax rate which they were trying to pay instead of some hugely reduced amount. But the reality is that because a lot of people that make a lot of money right now make most of their income from things that are not considered an EMT, such as dividends, capital gains, et cetera, and so forth, it winds up being that upper income earners, a lot of them are not getting hit by AMT, and you're getting a lot of people that are middle to higher upper income that are actually getting hit by the AMT. So the proposal is to change that. Some people are calling it the Buffett tax, a millionaire tax. I read about it a little bit. It's not exactly that. I mean, it's just basically a reformulation of the AMT, which right now isn't working.
It will mostly hit the. I mean, regardless of how you reformulate it, I mean, they call it a millionaire tax for a good reason, even though there's not like a if greater than 1 million blah.
It'll hit mostly people who are making over $1 million a year.
Yeah.
Okay, and according to our calculations, should raise about $400 billion. Okay, not exactly a shabby figure, to be honest with you. A couple of different advisors have made a calculation because the jobs. Okay, so you have the business tax cuts, which are $70 billion. There is a big amount of money which is on infrastructure spending and actually giving money to states to help them keep teachers, police officers, and firefighters employed. That's $140 billion. There is unemployment insurance benefits extending into 99 weeks and money for retraining long-term unemployed. That's $62 billion. And then there's the payroll tax cut, which is $175 billion. So if you think about it, there's $245 billion of tax cuts to businesses, which are offset by removing loopholes to oil and gas companies, taxing people who are paying very little income tax that should be paying more. Et cetera, and so forth.
Right.
If you look at it, I mean, the proposal on its face makes sense, but the political reality of this fucking thing is that I don't see how the fuck to pass anything like this at this point.
Right, this is a non-starter, right? It's a tax, so Republicans say no.
Yeah, that's what the Republicans are going to say. I mean, I don't see how the hell we're going to get anything out of it. And knowing, what really pisses me off is that is the Obama administration right now just posturing for the election? Is that it? We're not going to try to do anything?
I think that's pretty much the answer. No, we're not going to do nothing of substance on any topic whatsoever is going to happen between now and next November. I mean, they did pass apparently last week a patent reform thing that actually did get bipartisan support, which is interesting.
Wow!
But,
wow! Well, that's something.
Well, I mean, it actually is an important topic, although I
know it is a very important topic. Don't get me wrong, but the one thing is, in the great scheme of things, the shit that we need to resolve. It sucks.
Yeah, I mean that's just the realm we are in. I mean we've been in this for a while. I mean the anything we've gotten through has been an exception. The game plan since Obama's election was stop him from actually getting anything done as much as possible. Okay, that's enough, Alex. Come out.
Well, I mean, I'm just like, I don't know.
And by the way, the strategy appears to be working.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, this is just very, honestly, just sucks.
See you later.
I don't see how we're going to get anything done. It's just, you know, people out there in general are not doing good. I mean, our poverty rate is up. Average household incomes are down.
Especially when you look, by the way, inflation adjusted. All of these numbers, when you look nominally, are bad enough. But when you look inflation adjusted, things are awful.
Things are awful. And everybody's just sitting over there just fucking playing politics and not giving a shit. And I just, you know, I'm just getting really, you know, despondent about this whole thing, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, you look at it one way, and you almost think, like, well, in addition to being obstructionist, I mean, hey, this all matches with the Republican philosophy anyway, which is to generally do nothing. However, if you actually look at what Republicans do when they're in office, they don't do nothing. They did do a lot,
but a lot that didn't actually help us over the last decade, so
well,
I don't know.
Well, no, what they do has different priorities. So, yeah, it's one of the standard things where, you know, in theory, the Republicans always try to take the mantle of small, limited government. But in reality, they're all about expanding government power, just in different areas.
Right.
And they still use government power to, you know, help out the folks they think need helping out, but it's just a different set of people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
yep.
Anyway, another break, and then let's talk about Windows 8. Windows 8. So, enjoy your break, and we'll be right back after this.
Wind blues.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, Windows 8, that's the new unified Windows. It's supposed to do desktops, it's supposed to do tablets, it's supposed to do everything all in one.
Right. What I was reading is that it does have two very different interfaces.
Yes.
One that you pick that is for your desktop, you know, and one that for desktop computing, and one that you pick that is for tablet computing.
Or if you're a masochist, you can use the wrong one in each situation.
Of course. I mean, what the hell? Why not? I mean, I'm sure you would pick to do such a thing. But anyway,
The point is that there's just two interfaces. It's not like an automatic tablet mode and desktop mode. It's, you know, depending on the task at hand and what you are doing, you can flip back and forth between these interfaces.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, the new, what's the name of it? The tablet version is actually fairly innovative and does a lot of really interesting things, but it's hobbled by still being tied to the desktop operating system.
I mean, I don't know, but some people were saying it didn't feel it was hobbled, not so much in what they currently delivered. I think that what people were saying is that if you think about how people expect updates and things on their mobile OSs, like right now, at a much quicker pace. I mean, given the glacial pace of Windows desktop OS development, I mean, if people are going to have to wait for 2 years or 3 years for another set of updates on their tablets, I mean, they're going to be like, what the fuck? I mean, really? I mean, there's been like, I was looking at, I mean, we're at version 5 of the iOS, and it was only launched in 2007.
Right.
Okay. I mean, you know, that's one version, what, every 9 months on average?
Less than a year in any case.
Less than a year. So, I mean, so that's one problem. The other problem that that seems to be cropping up is that the tablets that were actually passed out for people's testing, like at this conference, were running on Intel processors.
Yep, big, heavy.
And they weren't even running on Atom. They couldn't, and it seems like, even though Microsoft spoke about having Windows running on ARM, it seems like it's not really happening the way that they would have liked.
Well, I'll take one thing I'll point people at, by the way, like, is the blog Daring Fireball. It has Jonathan Gruber, I think is the guy's name. Anyway, he has a lot of good commentary on this stuff. Now, it is clearly from an Apple fan perspective, so take that in mind. But he's talked about a bunch of things here, and like in terms of difference of approach, like one of the amazing differences that has always existed here is, you know, we're talking about this stuff in Windows 8 a long time before it actually releases on real products.
Right.
Whereas Apple plays things very close to the vest. You'll get maybe a limited developer preview. You'll get a developer preview of some sort a number of months before. But for the most part, you know, what you see here is lots of real people using, not real people, I guess, but developer types. But you see this being given out and samples on hardware that's not real, in a very half-finished state, a long way from, you know, its final form. And so you get lots of people going and getting their initial opinions on something that's probably a year away from being a real product.
Right.
And so there's lots of rough edges still. And Microsoft and, you know, their hardware partners may well resolve all those issues by the time they release a product. But in the meantime, they're already starting to build people's opinions of this thing when it's half formed. Whereas Apple isn't going to put out a damn thing and then until they're pretty sure it kicks ass.
Or at least until it's been fully baked. I think that's the one thing. It's so, I mean, right now you're getting all of this stuff that's like nowhere nearly a full bake. And, people are having obviously their opinions about it. And I think that it also, the problem is that it makes, instead of building hype, it does the opposite. Is what I feel like, you know. I think to a certain extent they feel pressured to show some of this stuff because it's like, we've got something coming. We got something coming. Then people look at it; it's not really fully baked, and you're like, hey, you got something looking, but I just tried this thing; it sucks. I don't know if that really helps.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we've talked about this catch-22 before. The alternative is making it look like you're not doing jack.
Right. Or, I don't know, maybe you gotta, like, be better at creating rumors or something. It just seems like right now, I mean, some people are being very positive about the tablets, about the Windows 8. Some people are being, you know, like, I mean, there's some, bringing some reality checks to the whole thing, but I don't know. I mean, I'm just not sure, how long it's going to take them to get these out the door. I don't know how good it's going to be. So,
it's so far in the future still, too. I mean,
yeah.
But like you said, there are a lot of people who are really excited at least about the tablet version of Windows 8. I've heard much less excitement about the desktop version of Windows 8. But right. the tablet version, I've heard people say this is really cool. They're not trying to clone the iPad. They're doing something really different here, and that is actually pretty cool. And yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't looked at all the videos to see exactly what it is. Looks like it looks more like the new Windows Phone stuff than anything else.
You're right. That's what it looks like. Yeah. Well, I just bumped into somebody this week who had a Windows Phone, and by the way, I was there with it for a couple of hours, and it didn't crash.
Okay.
I mean, I was with him for 4 hours, and I didn't see him have to pull out the battery a single time. So that's, you know.
Excellent. So I guess we'll see. Oh, the other thing I heard that was interesting, this was also from Daring Fireball, but linking to somewhere else, of course, pointing out that apparently it's also another difference in philosophy. The iPad seems to mostly be the expectation that people work on it in portrait and sometimes use landscape for some things. It seems to be the reverse for the Windows 8 things, with the expectation that people work on it in landscape and occasionally use portrait. And so, like, there's things in the developer docs that are like, oh, yeah, and you should probably make sure you have something for portrait, too, as opposed to, you know, very making it a very core element that everything works in both orientations. It seems to really have a strong preference for the landscape view, so widescreen, and you know, the cameras and such are and the physical buttons are located that make more sense in landscape as well, which seems like an interesting choice. I don't know. You're the one who has a tablet. Which way do you use yours?
I switch back and forth all the time between the portrait and landscape mode,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what I'm looking at. I mean, I would say that I use it half and half.
Okay.
In the modes. I mean, sometimes if I'm reading something, for example, I'll use it many times in the portrait mode. If I'm looking at video and I want to type something sometimes or whatever, I'll use the landscape mode. I usually do a lot of the typing in the landscape mode instead of portrait.
Hmm. Okay.
So
we
there
shall
you go.
See. I mean, you know. Anyway, I think that's a show.
Yep.
We somehow managed to string, like, almost, you know, not quite a full hour, but, you know, more than I thought we would.
Yeah.
Of course, it was probably mostly crap, but, you know. But, you know, we did our best.
We did our best
week.
Today.
It was not a good.
It's not been a good week for us. We'll say that. So,
okay, we'll see what happens next week. In the meantime, email
maybe
me.
Maybe somebody will blow up something. Who knows? Maybe we'll get some excitement.
Oh yes, that's what we want.
Well, it could be in the middle of the ocean.
Okay. So just to be clear, I should not be calling the FBI saying that you're advocating terrorism.
No, I'm not. I want something in the middle of the ocean, far away from everybody as possible.
Okay, there you go. Right. So in the meantime, before next week, email me at owlsmay@owlsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. And tell your friends to listen, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, and let me add, sorry for all the noises from Alex and my dog Roscoe. I know it's a little excessive, this show. Oops. Anyway, there's the really, really late being released show. It was a little short, too. We didn't have much to say, and there was lots of background noise. Oh, well. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.